Coming to you live from the original Mothers, you're listening to Cinema Jaw with your host, Rye the Movie Guy.
Thank you, Matt. My name is Ryan Jagiello, but I'm better known as Rye the Movie Guy, and I'm here alongside Matt Kabinsky.
That's right. Some people call me Matt K. My full name, Matt Kabinsky, and we're going to talk to you about some movies.
Exactly. Now, Matt, you're a movie lover for your whole life?
Absolutely, yeah. I've been watching movies, since I was, since I could see, so since my eyes opened.
Sounds good. Same here, and I've also been reviewing movies on Rye the Movie Guy blog for about 5 years. So hopefully you find these reviews and these upcoming commentaries on film rather interesting.
I hope so, too. So you want to get right into it? What do you
say? Sure.
All right. So I know that you went out this weekend, and I have to admit that I was remiss in my duties, and I have a wife and kid, and I don't want to say unfortunately. It's the best thing in my life. But I didn't get out to the theater this weekend.
I hope they're not listening.
Yeah, they probably aren't. Anyway, you saw Nine, which came out on 9909.
Yep, and I paid $9 to see it.
That's serendipity right there.
Exactly. But it is not a 9-star movie. Let me say this. Nine features gorgeous animation, but it was wasted on a subpar story. The opening scene set the right tone while showing the film's huge potential. Our main character, a sock puppet named Nine, awakens for the first time in a world that has been decimated by war. Those who fought in the war and why is unknown. As Nine discovers the world around him, he slowly uncovers clues as to what caused this mass destruction and wiped out all of mankind. He also encounters other puppets roaming the desolate landscape, each of them made by the same maker and each of them numbered just like him. The leader of the puppets is Number One. He believes that they should stay in hiding until all is quiet, as they know that there is an evil machine roaming around the land that kills anything that moves. The detailed animation is simply amazing. It draws you into this strange world. Unfortunately, the film veers from that eerie discovery theme and chooses to focus on big action sequences. This is a terrible mistake, as all the action takes away the unique feel of the film. I would have preferred to spend more time with the characters adventuring through different environments, revealing clues from the past. Eventually, we do get a full explanation as to what caused the war, and this too can be noted in the disappointment column. It's a story with themes that we have seen more than once before, including the destruction of mankind and man versus machine. The story is not complex enough, and that, in turn, explains why they chose to fill so much time with loud action sequences. In the end, the lesson we learned from Nine is that above all, a movie needs a compelling story in order for all the eye candy to mean anything. I give Nine a C-.
So C minus is this how you grade movies on the blog, Rye?
I do. I also like to list parents for the movie. This would be if they two movies made love together. This would be their child, and I came up with a couple interesting parents for the movie of Nine. They would be Walt. Yep, go ahead.
I want to take a stab at this.
Okay,
you already said Walt, so but I was going to say. Tim Burton, Nightmare Before Christmas.
I considered that.
Meets Terminator.
Very good. I went with Wall-E and Terminator 4 Salvation.
So I was close.
Yes, very close.
You said Wall-E. I thought you were going to say Walt Disney.
Like. Yeah. No. Wall-E and Terminator 4 Salvation.
Was this a Pixar film?
This was not a Pixar film. This was actually produced by Tim Burton. It had a lot of like just it, actually I should say it had huge potential. It started out, I really thought, like, wow, this is going to be exactly what I wanted it to be. It had that, like, dark feeling. You didn't know exactly what had happened, and you had the idea that this was going to be a film that was going to open up slowly as you discover what happened as the characters discovered it. But it ended up being rather rushed after the first, like, 10 minutes of that, like, eerie discovery feeling. After that, it just slipped into that, like, let's see how cool we can make this animation, and they really let the story slip.
Now, I did read a little bit about Nine because I couldn't get out to see it. And I know that originally it was a short film by the director, and his name escapes me right now. Do you remember the director's name?
I don't, actually.
Oh, well, we can put that in.
Yeah.
But I know that he had done a short film, and that's kind of what sold it to Tim Burton. Have you seen the short?
I haven't seen the short either.
Actually, I saw the short.
Now, the difference, though, on the short, and I haven't seen the short, is they don't talk in the short.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that would have helped the movie a little bit, because it would be tougher to explain what was going on. And that's exactly how the beginning of the movie, since Nine wakes up alone, has no one to talk to. And actually, his voice box isn't working at the time, so they have a long time of no speaking, looking around, trying to discover. And I found that was probably the most fascinating 5 minutes of the movie. Now, you've seen the short?
Yeah, I did. I saw the short a while ago, and I think you can find it on the internet. Actually, I saw it like almost a year ago, if I'm not mistaken. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
And I heard about this film, and I was really excited about it because I do really like animation.
Yeah. And the animation, I mean, I don't want to, you know, not highlight how good the animation was. It was probably one of the best animated movies that I've seen in the theater in a long time. And with Pixar doing everything they do, which is just awesome always, but this is just that darker animation, such detail, the dolls, the way they were stitched together, everything made sense in the world that they lived in and created with this animation, and I really appreciated that. But the story was just such a letdown, and they just didn't have enough to make it. The runtime is only an 85-minute runtime, and I felt it was already too long by that point.
Wow. Yeah, you know, that's interesting. And another thing is that Tim Burton always seems to go back to that stitched together theme. Like it's almost like a reoccurring theme in a lot of his movies is that Frankenstein thing. You know, obviously Edward Scissorhands is the most pronounced one of that. And in Nightmare Before Christmas, you had Sally, who was sort of the ragdoll character who was stitched together, and maybe that's what attracted him to this property. I don't know.
Yeah, he definitely has a darker vision with basically all of his films, and even with his animation, Nightmare Before Christmas, and he also did The Corpse's Bride, I believe he produced.
Yes,
it.
another stitched together.
Yeah, kinda. And another like dark animated feature, and I like him, and I want to see him keep trying these, but I think let's concentrate a little bit more on story, and then let all that eye candy and that animation come as you know, sugar on the top.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, also Nine being sort of a odd name for a movie. It's just a strict number, nine, and it's just the number nine.
Is it the numeral? It's not spelled out, N-I-N-E?
Right, not spelled out, just the number nine, and we had thought that it would be sort of fun to compile a top 10 list.
Yes, we did.
This being our first show, we'd like to have these top 10 lists probably throughout all our podcasts.
Yes, this will be a feature on Cinema Jaw.
So, for the first ever top 10 list on Cinema Jaw, we asked each other to come up with our 10 favorite films that have a number in them. It's loose based after that. They have to have a number in them, and they cannot be sequels.
Right. So Buttman Does Rio number 300 is out of the question.
Right. Superman 3 with Richard Pryor. I don't know why it would be on a list, but that doesn't count. It's a sequel, and it's not going to be on there.
Yeah, which is a shame, because Buttman Does Rio 300 is really a good film.
Yeah. So we decided that we would, I guess, alternate our picks.
Yeah. You want to start?
I will start with my number 10. Boy, if we could
only get the sound of shuffling paper in there.
All right. My number 10 film for a film with the number in the title, The 25th Hour.
I've never seen it.
All right. This is a Spike Lee directed joint, as he likes to call them.
With a Y.
And it stars Ed Norton, and he is basically going to jail in 24 hours. Very fascinating drama. If you haven't seen it, like you said you haven't, you got to give it a spin, Matt.
All right, cool.
Go ahead with your number 10.
All right, you're going to hate mine. my number 10 is actually 51st Dates with... go ahead, what's your reaction?
That is, Matt, this is shocking, actually.
Shocking?
Yes.
You know, I have a soft spot for date movies, and I actually saw this with my wife, and it was a great date movie, and there's nothing on my list that I haven't seen at least twice.
Okay, 51st Dates, you said.
Yes.
And this was a good date movie.
It was a great date movie.
All right, I guess.
And I'll tell you why I liked it.
Okay.
And Rotten Tomatoes gave it a really bad score. It's got 44% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the reason I like 51st Dates is it's a clever premise. You know, there's so many romantic comedies, boy meets girl, and you know, like nothing really happens in the movie. Here we have a woman who's got this absolutely terrible affliction, you know, where she can't remember anything. It's sort of like a memento affliction where she can't remember things from one day to the next. And there's this guy who falls in love with her, and he's got to figure out a way to make it stick. And finally, she does start to form some... Well, I don't want to give spoilers, but... I think this movie's old enough where I can say...
Dude,
a little
I'm so, sure. I'm yeah. sure. And it's. I think most people, like myself, could see what was going to happen within the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm not saying this is a great film. That's why it's my number 10 on the list. It was fun. It was at least an original, clever premise for a romantic comedy. Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore, always solid actors and actresses. And it was funny. There were great moments with... oh, geez. I'm having a brain fart. The comedic relief in the movie was... he's in all of Sandler's movies from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, boy. You like this guy.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I know his name.
We're looking
it
like total
right now.
Yeah, we're looking like total unprofessionals because we can't remember Rob Schneider's name.
Rob Schneider. Well, he's very unforgettable for me, so that's why I don't think it's that bad that I couldn't come up with his name. I'm not a Rob Schneider fan.
we can do it. All right. So, what was your number nine?
All right. Finishing up, 50 First Dates, as Matt said, couldn't even get a 50 on Rotten Tomato. Okay, my number nine. Moving on to number nine on the list. I have Four Weddings and a Funeral.
I was going to put that on my list, but I didn't.
Who doesn't like Hugh Grant? You're talking about a good date movie. This Hugh Grant sells me in everything he's in. He's always funny.
He buys dates.
He does. He does. very clever movie. It's got that little bit of English humor, and yet you got the American in there that he falls in love with, Rodney McDowell. And... just a very good movie. It's one of those that you can, you know, come across on the TV, and you always sort of stop on that station and finish watching the movie.
It is a good date movie, definitely. It's one of my wife's favorites. It's it just missed my list, so I'll agree with you on that one.
All right. Go ahead with your number nine, Matt.
My number nine may be controversial to some, but I really enjoyed Jim Carrey's first foray into the horror genre with the number 23.
Okay. I just want to make sure. This is supposed to be your top 10.
Top ten. It gets better.
Oh boy, I sure hope so.
Yeah, I don't know why, but for me, it was something that I found profoundly creepy. And to see somebody who we're used to seeing as a comedic actor in a role where he's really put through the paces of horror, and admittedly, it got a little weird and a little too surreal. But it was creepy. It was paranoid, and I thought it was well done.
Well, I passed. I never even took the time to watch number 23,
You're
so I really
it.
Have no
You're
comment.
Out.
And I don't think I'm missing out. But
fair enough.
I'll maybe check it out on your recommendation, but that's a slight maybe.
You know what? I don't think you'd be disappointed. There's some. I mean, Jim Carrey, not for nothing. The guy can act.
Oh, he can. I love him in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and The Truman Show. I mean, he could pull off some good roles. I just I don't know if I could stomach number 23.
You might be surprised.
All right.
So what was your number eight?
All right. Moving on to number eight. It's my first I would list as a classic on my list. Number eight, I have One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, brilliant.
On
Absolutely.
Your list?
Not on my list.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I really don't have to go too far into this movie. It's Jack Nicholson. I believe he won the Oscar, the Academy Award for it. The movie I know, in fact, did. Just an absolutely wonderful movie, and very, very emotional at the end with Chief breaking through the hospital window.
Yeah, who wrote the original novel? I should know this. Was it?
You seem to be asking a lot of questions that I don't know. I don't know if that's on purpose.
No, it's not on purpose whatsoever. I should know the answer to that too. But you know, I've never read the book. And I've only seen the movie a couple of times. And yes, it's an amazing film.
Yes, very good movie.
It's actually based on a somewhat true story. I think it's autobiographical.
I believe so. And I know that Michael Douglas produced the movie, and Danny DeVito stars in there. Just a great movie.
A young DeVito.
Yeah, a young DeVito.
It's from what, like 74, that film?
I want to say 1976, but I could be wrong on
no,
that.
No, you're probably right. Okay, so my
number eight.
Probably another controversial one, although Rotten Tomatoes gives this a score of 94%.
Okay.
So I would consider this a classic, and maybe you agree, maybe you disagree. 48 Hours. Nick Nolte, Eddie Murphy.
This is probably your first film that you've listed. We're three deep that I would say, yes, that deserves to be on the top ten list. It's not on mine, but a very funny movie.
Not only funny, but every time this movie comes on cable, USA Network or whatever it's on, I can't help but stop.
Yeah, it's definitely a movie you can watch, and there's classic scenes in there for sure.
Another 48 Hours, on the other hand.
Stay away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a good sequel. But the original, fantastic. Eddie Murphy at his best, the young Eddie Murphy, pre-Beverly Hills Cop, and just fresh off Saturday Night Live.
There was a time there when he was in the middle of everything Eddie Murphy touched just turned to gold.
Yes, and
even
now
that
it
movie
turns
Golden
to another
Child.
Substance. Yeah, Golden Child was awesome.
It was a good movie.
I love that movie. One of my favorites.
Yeah, definitely 48 Hours deserves to be on the list. Congratulations on your first one there.
Thank you for your approval, Rye. What's your number seven?
Number seven, I have The Sixth Sense.
Fantastic movie. Not on my list.
Wow.
I know, now I'm rethinking my list.
The Sixth Sense, I see dead people. It was definitely a thriller. It launched little Haley Joel Osment's career, and it also launched the director.
M. Night Shyamalan.
His career also. Brought back Bruce Willis. It did everything. It was just a great
Did
great
he ever go
movie.
Away?
Well, he sort of did a little bit there. I think he was sort of attached to the Die Hards, and that was it.
Well, yeah, but it brought him back, but then he did another Die Hard, which was a travesty.
Yeah, and we could go on more about that one, but sticking with The Sixth Sense, very good movie. One of those that I remember everybody talking about, and you got to go see this at the theater. Yeah. It's got such a suspenseful ending. Just a classic film.
Yeah. I would have to agree that that's should be on my list. I don't know why it's not, but my number seven is actually I'm a big fan of this genre. 28 Days Later.
Wow, not on my list. Great movie.
Yeah, you know, and I should say right now that I'm a huge zombie fan, and actually this is a point of contention amongst zombie fans that is this a zombie movie because they're not truly dead, they're just infected, but. That aside, what's his name? Cillian Murphy? How do you pronounce it? Is that right?
Cillian Murphy, maybe? A Cillian? It's a very odd first name.
Scarecrow from the Batman films.
Sure.
And a fantastic British
actor.
He's also
in Red Eye with the beautiful Rachel McAdams.
Yes, he seems to play a lot of villains, but in this one, he's actually the hero. And I could watch this flick again and again. It's so creepy and heartfelt. It's a really good genre piece.
The thing I remember about that movie is the first 10 minutes are as eerie as any movie I can even recall.
Yeah.
Just a great opening premise to a movie. Like, wow, what is going on here?
And it should be noted that there's actually a famous comic book. It's probably number one on the sales charts right now, The Walking Dead, which... The writer claims he inadvertently borrowed the beginning, but the famous beginning of both 28 Days Later and The Walking Dead, which is soon to be a TV show on AMC.
Interesting.
It's great. You're going to have to watch it.
Yeah.
But anyway, in Walking Dead, he also wakes up in the hospital and doesn't know what's going on and sort of stumbles upon this zombie apocalypse. And it's definitely absolutely one of the greatest beginnings of any film. And
yeah.
the whole thing takes you through the story.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Great. And
very good
movie. The film never breaks character.
No, it doesn't. This is definitely a movie that if you have not seen, we're getting close to that Halloween type of renting.
Yeah.
Definitely give this one a spin. 28 Days Later. Good call, Matt.
Thanks. So what was your number six?
Number six on my list, bum, 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 2001, A Space Odyssey.
That was going to be on my list.
I don't know how it can't be on your list.
Because, do you want me to tell you why?
Or
do you want me to go let you do your spiel first?
Let me do my spiel
first.
Go
ahead, do your spiel.
Well, really, there isn't that much of a spiel to give. This is Stanley Kubrick, in my opinion, probably his best movie. One of those films I love to watch after I'm about four martinis deep. And just can sit there and watch it and just be mesmerized by the film. It's just a beautiful movie. Go ahead.
Visually stunning. Absolutely groundbreaking in its time, but it is boring. I'm sorry, dude. I mean, it's in space. It's very slow, and the villain is a light on the wall.
Very true, but it doesn't necessarily ever give me that vibe of like a sci-fi movie that needs to be action-packed. It's sort of a slow-paced drama, even though it takes place in you know, the future. But it, it just has a different vibe for me all the way through. So I'm not, you know.
And that's cool. That's why this is going to be a good show, I think, because we have very different tastes.
Yeah.
And do your best impersonation of Hal.
All right, here we go.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yes, Matt. Now, you're number six.
I don't like what you're doing. I can't do it. I'm not going to.
Yeah,
right. Hal is so dry.
Yeah.
But it's a good villain.
He is a good villain. A classic villain also.
Good story.
It's one of those that you see borrowed off of constantly all
yes.
the time. We just saw it in WALL-E. And,
I haven't seen WALL-E yet.
Oh, WALL-E's a great movie. Always pops up. You always see references to the movie of 2001 and, you know, just those iconic images that Kubrick was able to put on screen.
Yeah, I mean, Kubrick is a master. I am not going to ever debate that. I mean, there's really nothing he's ever done. Dr. Strangelove, you know, that nothing he's ever done that I didn't love.
Yeah.
And 2001, I like the movie. It's a little slow for me, and that's why it didn't make my list.
All right, let's go on to your number six, Matt.
You're going to hate this.
Oh, boy. Well, I have to be honest, I absolutely love that we have not overlapped once. I was afraid we were going to overlap the whole list.
I bet you once we get into the top five, we'll have at least one overlap.
Okay.
All right, my number six, and this is a movie I saw for the first time when I was very young. It also has 2000 in the title. It's Cherry 2000.
I have never even heard of this movie, so you're going to have to explain
yeah,
this one all by yourself.
You're not alone, because it got a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, man.
But it's not. It's Melanie Griffith, actually. The whole premise is a sci-fi movie where a guy. It's in the future when men, instead of getting wives, can opt to get robot companions that are in every way female, but they, you know, lack certain human qualities, which is like a soul, pretty much. So
okay, you were going to talk about like a sexual organ.
Well, they have that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have all that, and in fact, that's why they're so popular. So anyway, he has this, this love droid, the main character of the story, which is kind of creepy. And there's a love scene right in the beginning where they start going at it in the kitchen and the dishwasher overflows and they're rolling around in water and she short circuits, which you think they would have, you know, fixed that.
Yeah.
But, anyway, so he has got to go on this quest because he's so in love with the Cherry 2000. The title character is the robot.
Yeah.
So he hires this tracker because they have to go across this barren wasteland, which is highly dangerous, and he needs a guide. So Melanie Griffith, of course, is his guide. And subsequently, he winds up falling in love with a real woman who is Melanie Griffith. And, you know, yeah, it's cheesy. Is it a great film? No. Is it fun? Yes. It's a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite sci-fi schlock films of all time. Cherry 2000, highly recommended for me.
All right, highly recommended. That was his number six.
So what was yours?
Now we move to our top five, Matt.
Ah, yes, the top five.
All right, my number five movie with a number in the title is Darren Aronofsky's 1998 masterpiece, Pi.
Oh, you're throwing a curveball. Pi is a number.
Yes.
3.14. Who can do more digits?
That's
here?
About as far as I go. Maybe 3.143, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, which is, of course, the famous formula for discovering the circumference. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not a math whiz.
Of course, it is a brilliant movie shot in black and white. It's Aronofsky. You know, I originally saw Requiem for a Dream before I saw Pi, and it was so interesting to go back and see Pi and see how similar it was edited to Requiem for a Dream, and the same type of vibe and feel. Very interesting movie. I think it needs to be watched twice to fully understand and really grasp how good of a movie it is. I don't even know the main actor's name. But it's a movie that if you haven't seen, definitely watch it on a Friday night and then wake up on Saturday morning and rewatch it.
You know, I'll admit that I've only caught bits and pieces of that movie. And every time I did, I was like, I got to watch this thing. I got to sit down and watch it because Requiem for a Dream probably is all-time favorites. It's in the top 10 for me.
Yeah, that's probably his masterpiece right there. If I had to pick an Aronofsky masterpiece.
that movie is harrowing. I mean, it's difficult to watch.
And I'm telling you, if you're a fan of that movie, Pi has a lot of the similar type of, like, quick edits, those, you know, fast cuts. It's just a very fun movie to watch.
It's on my list now. I'll Netflix it.
Yeah. Your number five, Matt?
No, my number five, this also might be controversial. See, my movies are not as critically acclaimed as yours.
But although it this is called a top 10 list, Matt.
This one did really well in the theater. It's got an 85 on Rotten Tomatoes and 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Hey, not bad. I liked 40-Year-Old Virgin. Not on my list, but all right. It's a solid five.
We've yet to overlap. Steve Carell and the actress's name is escaping me right now, but she was in... oh, man. She's been in so many great films.
Oh, yes. Can't think of it either.
She was in Being John Malkovich. And anyway, so the 40-Year-Old Virgin, if you haven't seen it, it's a comedy about a guy who's 40 years old and he still hasn't gotten laid. And, you know, he finds true love and he bumbles through his first encounter, shall we say.
Yeah.
And it's an absolute tour de force.
Yes.
And it made Steve Carell's career, it probably paved the way to The Office, although I think they were already doing that.
Yeah,
at that point.
I think he had started The Office, but this was definitely his breakout role. And it was a movie that's definitely laugh out loud funny, you know, not chuckle at it. This is definitely ha-ha-ha funny.
Yeah, and I watched it again recently, and so many comedies really don't stand the test of time. But this one, at least for now, it's not that old, but it's standing up.
Yeah. You know. All right, moving on to my number four. This is my top four now of movies with a number in the title. I'll stick with the comedy theme, and I give you 16 Candles.
Dude, almost on my list. I was wrestling with myself over
that.
Yeah,
this is John Hughes. It's John Hughes' best movie with a number in the title, I guess, that he had directed. Obviously, Molly Ringwald, just a great, funny movie, classic lines. It's the kind of movie I think anybody of our generation has seen numerous times and can repeat lines, and we could go on and on. Anthony Michael Hall, fantastic.
Yeah.
Just a great movie. I don't know how it didn't make your list, but let's see what you got in store for us at number four.
Okay, you know what? You might like this one.
Okay.
In fact, I don't know a single person on the planet Earth who doesn't like this movie.
All right, I have a feeling it's going to be on my list then.
Miracle on 34th Street.
Wow. It's almost like you saw my list and made sure you didn't put it on. You know, this is great. It's not on my list, but who doesn't like this movie?
You know, and I'm talking about the 1946 classic, of course. The
yes.
Black and whites, not the the Technicolor, you know, one that they did later, or the remake that they did in the 50s.
Right.
This is the original Miracle on 34th Street. Really, come on. I mean, it's Miracle on 34th Street. Do I need to describe this film to you?
You really don't.
Yeah. You know it. You love it. It's about Santa Claus. You know, you can't help. Some people say It's a Wonderful Life is the best Christmas movie. I say it's Miracle on 34th Street, and I'd go toe-to-toe with anybody who says otherwise.
This is great. This is great. All right, we're going to move on now to our top three.
I'm excited.
Yeah. My third favorite movie with a number in its title. I don't know how this is not on your list, so it's going to be the first movie we're going to overlap.
I betcha.
It's the 1995 thriller 12 Monkeys.
No.
Wow,
not on my list. But you'll know why when I tell you my number three.
All right. Well, 12 Monkeys, it's Bruce Willis. It's Brad Pitt. The director is Terry Gilliam. Excellent movie coming back from the future, back into the past, to the present. Madeline Stowe, very underrated actress, is in the movie. One of sci-fi's best. And another one that I saw in the theater, sort of forgot about for a few years, came across it when somebody gave me the DVD and was just thrilled to watch it a second time. And since then, I've fallen in love with the movie.
It was a little too... I don't know. I mean, this is why I didn't make my list, because it was a little too disjointed for me. I do love the movie. I'm not dissing the movie. It's definitely a great movie, especially a great movie with a number in its title. But the real reason it didn't make my list is because I have another Bruce Willis movie at number three.
Okay.
The Fifth Element.
Fifth Element at number three. Not on my list. Very good movie. I've only seen it one time, and it was incredibly memorable for me. But it's always a movie I want to go back and watch again because it's out there, and it's extremely colorful and comes
yes.
off the screen.
Listen, this is the movie that made me fall in love with Mila Jovovich.
Yeah, and anybody who saw that movie, sure.
Oh, my gosh. She looks great in this film. She acts really well because at first she can't speak English. She's, of course, the title character, the Fifth Element. And Bruce Willis is solid. I mean, he plays an action hero. It's not a big stretch for him. Gary Oldman's in it, and his performance is not up to what I would call his standard, you know. What sells the movie for me really is the set pieces and the story overall. And there's this fantastic scene with an opera singer. And it's just a feel-good movie. Every time it's on, I have to stop and watch it. Maybe it's because Mila Jovovich wears just about nothing but Band-Aids for the whole movie. But
this would be a great movie to watch on Blu-ray also. Don't you agree?
I would
visually
totally,
stunning.
Yeah, visually stunning. Absolutely. And really, you know, I don't want to appear to be sexist or anything, or it's not because Mila's hot. She is hot, but actually it was her performance in this movie that makes me love the movie.
Awesome.
She did a great job.
Yeah. So we move on to our
top two
movies here. Still no overlapping, which I find is absolutely amazing.
This is funny. We gotta overlap at least one.
Yeah.
I'm assuming we do here.
All right. Number two movie with a number in the title is the 1997 wow movie I thought of the summer, Seven.
Yes. We
overlapped
at the same position.
Wow, it's also your number two?
It's also my number two.
Well, that's good. We can knock it both out. I mean, what can't you say about this movie? We got Brad Pitt, and this was a young Brad Pitt at the time. It was, we weren't sold on Brad Pitt's star power yet. It had a Kevin Spacey who wasn't a huge star either, but was turning into one at the time.
Yeah, just after Usual Suspects. So.
Sure. And then you had Morgan Freeman. And it was and Gwyneth Paltrow actually,
yeah.
And wow, what a
great
movie.
Supporting role for her.
Dark, that's a David Fincher vehicle. I believe he directed that movie.
Yeah,
and it was such a good movie to watch and try to figure out the ending. I was one of those guys that sort of did figure out the whole ending, what's in the box question. While I was in the theater, I don't think that a couple of the people I was with did, but
I hear in the director's cut they actually show what's in the box, although
Ooh.
I've never actually seen it.
I've never have either.
If they do, I prefer the version where they don't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You'll leave it to your imagination to know how gross it was, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely excellent flick. If you haven't seen it, give that one a spin.
You know, I think what sold this movie on me was the fact that You have a villain who, in every way, is despicable. He's doing horrible things. He's a serial killer. But yet, you can't help but, on some level, at least some part of you, identifies with this killer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because he's twisted and he's wrong.
Yeah.
But he's doing what he believes is correct. And the way he describes it, you just can't knock him. You're like, you know, he's right. He's got a point.
Yeah.
He may not be going about...
Yeah, he's a little bit psycho, no doubt, absolutely.
Yes.
But he's trying to make his point, and he's just a fascinating character.
And the way the villain stays one step ahead of the detectives, who are really smart characters.
Yeah, and I love a movie that doesn't dumb down for the audience.
Yeah.
And you got to try to figure out, oh, it's because this happened, and they clearly show it to you before it's going on. This is a movie that... wants the audience to be as smart as the characters on screen, and I think you enjoy watching that.
Unrelenting.
Yeah.
And
period.
I will say one thing. The scene, obviously the movie's about the seven deadly sins, and the scene that stuck with me the most was lust.
Yeah.
I cannot, to this day, it still messes with my head.
Absolutely. I have nightmares about it.
Nightmares. Yeah. Scary movie. All right, should we do a drum roll here?
So we're on to our number ones. We've only had one overlap. Congratulations on your list already.
And yours.
My number one film with a number in its title stars Tom Hanks. Ron Howard directed Apollo 13. Houston, we have a problem.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, where you say you went on and on about how you're a big zombie nut, I love space movies. I love NASA. I took a trip down to Florida last year to the Kennedy Space Center, and it's just, I'm just a kid at heart when it comes to like Apollo type stories.
Sure.
And
did you go to space camp when you were a kid?
I didn't, unfortunately. Always
did you want
wanted
to?
Always wanted to. Another great movie, Space Camp. But about Apollo 13, it's a story we know how it ends. And I always appreciate a movie where we know the ending already, but the director and the actors on screen have a way of creating the suspense that makes you almost believe, like, you don't know how this is going to end. I'm, you know, and by the end, you're just exhausted and so happy that the turnout was exactly what you already knew going into the movie. But it's just a brilliant space movie, and one of Tom Hanks's better roles.
He's wow, yeah. Absolutely one of my favorite actors of all time.
Absolutely.
In fact, I really can't think off the top of my head of a role of his that I did not enjoy. Can you?
He did that Coen Brothers movie. Boy, I almost got it now. He plays a thief. I can't think of the name of it right now. The Lady Killers. He was in The Lady Killers. It was a remake that the Coen Brothers made that I didn't really care for.
It's hard to paint him as the villain because you want to love him so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's just, he's sort of like our Jimmy Stewart, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. He is the Jimmy Stewart of our generation, and I don't know if that's a compliment to him or not. I'd say it is.
Yeah, I believe it is.
You know what? Before I do my number one, I'll say Jimmy Stewart, you know, since we did mention Christmas movies, have you ever seen Rope?
I have never seen Rope. Alfred Hitchcock.
Alfred Hitchcock, yes. Rope is an amazing movie, man. It's done in one take. The whole film is done in one take.
That's awesome.
And everybody talks about that one scene from Goodfellas that's done in one take. Try doing an entire freaking movie.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that maybe on a future podcast.
Absolutely.
That's probably, for me, one of Jimmy Stewart's best films of all time. But
gotta check that one out.
So absolutely.
We've come to the point where you're ready to give us your number one
film. And thank you for letting me get the last one in on this one. I think you're going to agree that this is worthy. For me, the number one film with a number in its title, and this, I have to say, I'm going to preface it a little bit, was a film that absolutely changed my life. The first time I saw it, it really opened my eyes to what movies could be and what they were all about. And I saw it at a very young age. It's an old film. It's from the 70s. THX 1138.
George Lucas.
Yes. One of his inaugural, I think it might have been his very first.
I believe it was.
And I think we have a segment coming up about directors and their first outings, and that wasn't my choice for that. But anyway, I digress. So, THX 1138. Some people speculate that the Misfits wrote their song, We Are 138, which is a very mysterious song, about that movie. It may or may not be the case, but the Nine Inch Nails actually has a soundbite at the beginning of the downward spiral from that movie. It's a post-apocalyptic world where human beings have subjected themselves pretty much into slavery to, not exactly to machines, to one another. Like, humanity has suffered. We no longer reproduce sexually. It's all like test tubes, and work has become the pinnacle of existence, and nobody has any sort of outlet or creativity. And one guy, Robert Duvall, in a
Bobby,
great performance.
Bobby Duvall.
He sort of starts to see the system for what it is and stops taking the drugs and breaks away from this horrible world. And it's about his escape, sort of Logan's Run style. He manages to get the hell out of Dodge. And, man, what a ride.
Yeah. I've only been able to see the movie one time, and it's been a few years. But I'm a George Lucas fan, obviously, Star Wars fan. And I remember watching the movie, and it's just one of those films that makes you think. And you hit it right on your head. It has, like, an influence on you when you watch the movie. You get done watching it. You're laying there in bed maybe afterwards, and your mind's running about it like, wow, what a movie.
And, you know, it's also one of Donald Pleasance's few roles, unfortunately, because he's a great actor. And, of course, he's most famous for his role as Dr. Loomis in the Halloween serial.
Interesting.
If you ever have a chance to watch THX 1138 and you haven't watched it, do so. It's fantastic.
All right. So there was our top 10 lists. You actually got 19 films listed out of two top 10s, which I find amazing. Those are our, again, top 10 films with a number in the title.
And we only overlapped once, but in the same position.
Very interesting. So I guess saying that way, 7 really is our winner since we overlapped it on our lists at number 2.
At number 2.
That says something about that movie.
Yeah, and I'll read the stats because I took down some stats. It's got an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb. And I can't imagine why it doesn't have a higher score than that. Because for my money, this is one of the greatest thrillers, detective stories, film noir slash horror of all time.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, it's got Morgan Freeman in it.
Yeah. And Brad Pitt.
Absolutely. So, that was our top 10 list. We're going to be doing this every week, hopefully. A different top 10 with a different topic all the time. Hope you enjoyed that. Actor that I don't believe starred in any of the movies we had just mentioned, and I can't think of any movies that he has that has a number in its title off the top of my head.
There's got to be at least one, but...
But I'm not positive. But he has unfortunately left us. I believe he died on Saturday at the age of 57, and that's Patrick Swayze.
Swayze.
Good old Swayze.
You know, some people say that Swayze got a little soft toward the end there. You know, did some romantic kind of films. I even really enjoyed his romantic films. I can't say enough about Patrick Swayze. And it's not just because he passed away and everybody should say nice things about people that leave us. But I really enjoy his body of work as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. The man gave us, I wrote an article this morning and listed Patrick Swayze's top 5 films, and at number 5 I had Point Break, him and Keanu Reeves.
Whoa.
Yes.
I would put that at number 5 too.
It was a great movie. At number 4 I had The Outsiders. He played Ponyboy's older brother. And Francis Ford Coppola's masterpiece there. Number 3 I had Red Dawn.
Yes.
Wolverines.
Yes.
And he's just the leader of the group, you know?
Yeah, with that scene where they drink the deer's blood.
Yeah. And then there's a scene where Charlie Sheen and everybody's crying in the woods. And there's good old Patrick Swayze saying, let it turn, let it turn. Yeah. He was
the strong one, you know?
He was the leader, very wise. At number 2, I had Dirty Dancing.
Absolutely. You know, it's a chick flick. But nobody puts Baby in a corner.
Yeah, I mean, it's another movie. You're gonna flip around and come across that movie. You're going to end up stopping and watching at least some of it.
Best thing about that movie, Jennifer Grey's original nose.
Yes, Jennifer Grey's original
Jennifer
nose.
Jennifer Grey, if you ever come across this podcast.
Who was also in Red Dawn with Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, Jennifer Grey, excellent. Ferris Bueller, I can't say enough about her. As soon as she changed her nose, I lost interest.
Yeah.
You know what? Worst nose job of all time. Rock your nose. Take a lesson from Barbara Streisand. Just be yourself.
Yeah, I mean, look at Owen Wilson. He lets it hang out.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Number 1 I have of a Patrick Swayze film, Ghost.
Yeah.
This is a movie that actually makes me cry. I remember being just a young teenage man watching this movie and just being very choked up at the end. I thought... look over, and everybody in the room's crying. It's that kind of movie.
You know what, though? You're missing a huge, huge Swayze film on your list.
And I know you're going to say Roadhouse.
Abso-freaking-lutely Roadhouse. I mean, I can't believe you, as a dude, would put Ghost above Roadhouse.
Yeah, well, I just I was going for the classic film, I guess, a Ghost, you know?
You're going for the chick film.
I was trying to please the female audience.
Yeah. Come on, Roadhouse. He's tearing guys' throats out with his bare hands. Sam Elliott in that movie, I mean, he's the man's man. I mean,
the Marlboro man.
He narrates for the dude.
He does.
And need I say more?
Yeah.
Seriously. That movie is one of my, I don't want to put it into my top 10, but it's up there.
Wow.
Roadhouse is amazing. And yeah, it's a schlock action movie. It doesn't really say any social, you know, there's no social commentary to it. But Roadhouse, come on.
Yeah, definitely. Roadhouse, great Swayze movie. And he's had a few others in there. I mean, he was a great actor, and he's definitely going to be missed.
Yeah, absolutely. Patrick Swayze, our hat is off to you, and we miss you.
Yeah, Patrick Swayze dies at the age of 57. Again, we're live here at Mother's. This is Cinema Jaw, our first podcast.
Yeah, and if you hear some music in the background, that is because we are actually recording at the original Mother's in Division on Division Street in Chicago, and they're open.
And they are open, and there are people drinking, having a good time, and they're listening to the show as well. So yeah. This has been so far a success.
Yeah, and we're drinking and having a good time too. So you want to talk about some DVDs?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of drinking, you want to sit at home, have a beer, and watch a movie? Let's get to some DVD reviews. I know you saw something rather interesting that you wanted to bring to the table.
Yes, you know, because unfortunately, here I go saying unfortunately again. I don't want to say unfortunately. I used to love going to the theater with my wife, and it's something we're going to get back into. We have a 2-year-old son, so it's hard to get to the theater these days. But I got a good bootleg guy. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, we
don't condone that.
No,
but,
that's horribly wrong. You should never have a good bootleg guy like I do. But we just rented a film, and I actually paid for this. It wasn't a bootleg. I went to the red box on the corner, and those things are great.
Sure.
$1, and you can rent a movie. It's fantastic. Brand new to DVD, I Love You, Man.
Very funny movie. Paul Rudd. I remember reviewing this movie and saying we are smack dab in the middle of the Paul Rudd era. This guy is in all these movies. It seems you're going to get a laugh. Paul Rudd, fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, like it's so sardonic and dry, the humor, you know, and it's a little awkward, you know, like but you love watching it. And you know, the cool thing about this movie is it never seemed false to me. Like, all the jokes rang true for me. Like, this is real life.
Yeah. And you had touched on how it was awkward. And Paul Rudd plays that part so perfect. He's just awkward guy, you know. He doesn't know how to be a man's friend, you know.
Yeah.
And there's so many funny moments. A lot of times films seem to play a certain card to death, but this one just did it the right way, where that awkwardness ran throughout from the start of the film all the way to the end, and it was always funny. He always sort of did something a little bit different that made him even more awkward. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, but the who was the supporting actor? I mean, I've never even seen him in anything.
Now, he his name escapes me, but he is in
the man love of the film, the love interest.
Yeah, it's trying to break up with so-and-so. What's that?
I don't remember his name, man. But anyway, I thought he really
again,
had
again, coming up with questions I can't answer.
Sorry. I really thought that he had the best scene of the movie, which was, you saw it, right? You saw the
movie. I did.
Okay. The best scene for me was the toast, where, you know, he's all of a sudden announced as the best man, and he's at the rehearsal dinner, and I'm not going to give away the joke, but he makes one of the most awkward rehearsal dinner speeches, and it becomes totally inappropriate, and he didn't mean it that way.
Exactly. Great scene, just a well-written scene, you know, very well-written, and I just remembered he stars in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yes.
Yes. Very funny movie also. He is very good and very funny, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing this guy all the time.
You know, who did he remind you of? If you had to pick another actor whose presence he sort of reminds you of, you're going to hate me for saying this.
I hope you're not going to say, but I think you're going to say Jeremy Piven.
No, not at all. Brendan Fraser. Or Fraser.
Yeah, that guy. You know, he's a that guy.
Yeah, he's a that guy, but I'm ashamed to admit I sort of enjoyed the Mummy.
Yeah, well, the Mummy and zombies, I guess.
Yeah,
it's your kind of genre.
Yeah, I like schlock movies, I'll admit it.
Yeah, what else you got on your DVD rentals there, Matt?
You know, let's see, the Watchmen.
Yes, this was came out March of this year. It was sort of the must-see movie at the theater at the time,
and I did see it in the theater.
Yeah,
twice.
This is out on DVD. I think I was not a humongous fan of the movie, but I was telling people that if they're going to see it, they should really go see it on the big screen, because it was pretty much a spectacle to be seen. It was a beautiful film.
It was beautiful, and it clocked in at like 3 hours or something.
Sure
have
did.
You ever read the graphic novel?
See, I have not.
You know, it's funny because I really think that, maybe you don't necessarily have to read the book first, but the graphic novel is known throughout the comic book world. And I'll qualify that statement by saying I'm a bit of a comic book geek for being thoroughly layered like an onion. Like, there's so much information in every panel. It's so thick. You'll read this book 500 times, and every time you read it, you'll pick up something new. And I was pleased to see on the screen that I've watched it three times now. I saw it twice in the theater, and then I rented it recently. That held up, because every time I watched it, each time I found something new, I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. There it is.
Well, that's great. A lot of people, when the movie came out in the theater, that seemed to be like a point of major discussion. Have you read the graphic novel?
Yeah.
And have you know, did people enjoy it more if they had read the graphic novel? And it seemed overall they had. And you got to remember, I mean, I'm judging it on just the film. I thought it was good, but maybe I didn't catch all the layers that you were talking about from reading the novel. It didn't come across to me being
how many times
a person
have you seen
who
it?
Hadn't read it, just seeing the movie. I don't know if I picked up on all that.
Did you watch it more than once?
I've only watched it once. And also, the other thing, too, is I think the graphic novel came out somewhere in the early 80s, mid-80s there.
Yeah, mid-80s.
And I think a lot of movies and stories have actually probably almost been ripped off, you know, ripped Watchmen off. And so now that I'm finally seeing the movie these years later, I'm seeing things that I've seen before, ideas, and I wasn't, like, blown away by that either. Not to say it wasn't a bad film. Just, I don't think for me it lived up to the hype that I had hoped it had.
As far as from a fan's perspective, I will say it did live up to the hype. There's a lot of controversy over they changed the ending from the graphic novel. And, of course, the graphic novel, I should mention, was written by Alan Moore, whose properties have been made into other movies, most famously League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and From Hell. Was another one, V for Vendetta, most recently.
Yeah, very good movie.
Very good movie. And apparently Alan Moore, however, is not satisfied with his film adaptations to the point where he took his name off the Watchmen movie altogether.
Wow.
And Dave Gibbons, who is the artist for the book, is the only person as a creator of the graphic novel who's listed in the credits. Alan Moore said, I want nothing to do with this film. He's a bit of a prima donna, let's say.
Yeah.
But
sounds like it.
You know what? I think he picked the wrong one to jump off the boat on, because from all the movies that have been made of his work, this one stayed the most true, with the huge exception of the ending. In the graphic novel, they drop a giant squid, and that's the only way to explain it, on New York City.
Which would have been difficult to pull off, I think, in the movie.
Yeah, I think it would have been difficult to pull off visually, but also in the post 9/11 world, because the story is written in the 80s, I think the destruction, plus making Dr. Manhattan the villain, just made more sense in the story. And here I'm spoiling stuff.
Yeah.
I can't
don't
do want to
go too far. Matt's giving Watchmen a definite spin on DVD.
Yes.
I would say if you're a fan of comic books, definitely check it out.
Before we get to your DVD picks, let's take a quick break, because I'm going to step out of the room for a minute.
Sure.
I'm actually going to go take a leak. That's what I'm going to do. We could say that. This is the internet. There's no FCC.
All right. So we'll be right back here at Mothers on Division. You're listening to Cinema Jaw.
All right. You're listening to Cinema Jaw. We're back here at the original Mothers, talking about DVDs that are new to the scene. Rye, what do you got?
All right. I checked a couple out this week. I'm going to give you first an absolutely awesome documentary, Tyson, about the boxer, not the frozen chicken.
I wanted to see that.
Yes. Mike Tyson, like you've never seen him before. This is just strictly him talking. There is no other narration or anybody explaining his career. We basically start with old footage and work through his entire career. And in between, you have Tyson talking, which you think, oh, it's all going to be one-sided and all favorable story. But instead, Tyson is so honest. He just says it exactly how it is, what happened when he bit Evander Holyfield's ear, you know, his marriage with Robin Givens.
I'm really curious, what did happen?
Well, he talks about really getting his ass beat in the first fight. In the second fight, they show Evander Holyfield headbutting Tyson on more than two occasions in the ring. And it's just a very subtle sort of a boxing move where he comes up and keeps headbutting him on purpose. And they had knew that he had done this. And Tyson was just furious. And Tyson says that he lost it there for a little while, but that he did indeed just take a chunk out of his ear.
Yeah, he bit his ear off, man.
He did.
I mean, listen, he could have headbutted him back or maybe hit him below the belt or something a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't, you know, WWE, like he was going to whip a snake out and, you know, do something or cut his hair. I mean, he just took a bite out of the guy's ear, you know.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, I guess if you got to get a job done.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, though, an absolutely fascinating documentary. Give it a spin, especially if you're our age. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Punch-Out. Dude, I'm so glad you said that.
Iconic figure when we were growing up. It's definitely a great movie, and that was a great video game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's right up there with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as far as 80s characters go. Yeah, Tyson, for me, he was my hero growing up. He was the champ for me. I mean, and I have a whole lot of respect for Muhammad Ali, the sport of boxing in general.
Yeah, but Tyson, especially back then, the sport of boxing, you know, was very legit. It seems now it's sort of, you know, tatered off a little bit.
It probably wasn't legit then, but it did seem that way when we were kids.
Yeah, it sure did. Keeping in the sports realm, another DVD just came out last Tuesday, is entitled Sugar. This is brought to us by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, and those are the two that brought us Half Nelson a couple years ago. Very interesting movie. And Sugar deals with Dominican Republic players trying to come up to the major leagues. And how fascinating, how difficult it is. We always hear the Sammy Sosas or the David Ortizes, the guys who made the major leagues. This sort of focuses on how tough it is to come over, learn English, go play a ball out in Iowa somewhere, live on a farm, and how different that is from their culture of growing up and how it doesn't work out for everybody. And it's just a very fascinating drama, good movie. And I would highly recommend Sugar.
Was it based on true events? Or
it's very, very much based on true events, but it's not the actual player that they pick on isn't necessarily based on one person's events. But they actually filmed down in the Dominican and went to different baseball camps that they have there. And they have some old coaches and old players. And actually all the actors that play the baseball players in the movie were actually former Dominican players that never made it to the major leagues.
You know, and Rye, this is something, this is our first podcast, and we're still getting to know one another here. Something I don't know about you, actually. We're in Chicago. Cubs or Sox?
There's only one way to answer that, and that's Chicago White Sox.
Oh, my God. Cubs.
Oh, boy. This is going to be good.
This is going to be an interesting show.
Absolutely.
All right. But here we are. Wait. We can agree on one thing. Ready? The Bears.
Yeah, we got the Bears.
That's the thing about Chicago. We argue our asses off in the summertime. Come winter, we're all hugging.
Yeah.
The Bears.
It's a fun sports town to be involved in. That's absolutely for
it's
sure.
The best sports town.
Yeah. I don't really think there's anything close to it. Let's keep it on the DVDs, though, Matt.
Yes, we're talking about movies, not
sports. We don't
want to
turn into the Mike North show here. DVDs. My last one that I'll give you is a Russell Crowe vehicle, State of Play. He plays the last great journalist. And it's one of these, hey, the journalist is smarter than the cops type movie. Rachel McAdams is in it. And also Ben Affleck, who I sort of loathe. Outside of Chasing Amy, I loathe the man. And
Affleck, you don't like him?
No, don't like him. And the movie is okay. I wouldn't give it an absolutely failure of a grade, but at the same time, it's that kind of journalist is smarter than the cops movie. And how many times is the actual villain the best friend or the very good guy in the very beginning? You can see this whole thing's going to come full circle and be, oh, we figured this one out 5 minutes into the movie. And I don't think it gave us anything new to reach on. I wouldn't go out of my way to rent it, but if you have the movie sitting at home from Netflix, don't just return it without watching it. Go ahead and give it a spin. But I middle of the road for me.
But you like Russell Crowe.
I do like Russell Crowe.
What was your favorite Crowe movie?
My favorite Russell Crowe movie is probably L.A. Confidential.
L.A. Confidential is good. What was the one where he was a tobacco whistleblower?
Oh, it's a great movie, The Insider.
The Insider was great. But my favorite of all time, lesser known, Romper Stomper.
Never even seen it.
Wow. Very unrelenting look at skinheads in Australia. And it's some crazy action pieces. It was done on a shoestring budget. Russell Crowe, when he was like 19, completely unknown, pretty much his breakout role. Well, it wasn't even a breakout, but it was one of the first ones he got under his belt, and he carries the movie, and it's
Did he still have the little mole on his in between his eyebrows?
It's a little less. You can't see it as much, but yeah it's there. He's still Russell Crowe, man.
Yeah, he's a great actor, no doubt about it. He actually won the Academy Award for Gladiator, I believe.
Well-deserved.
Well-deserved, but probably not his best role. I think he had four or five roles probably better than that.
It was the film that did it. It wasn't his performance.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a Ridley Scott movie. Very good film. So that does it for our DVD rental segment of the show, and I think we're getting ready to close it up with our last segment that we had decided, because this is our first podcast, that we would celebrate it by discussing your favorite first effort by a director. So a director's first movie out on film that you just absolutely think is extraordinary, if you will.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you go first on this one, Matt.
Okay. Here's the thing. I have to qualify this by saying I think he may have had another movie that came out before this, but this was his first major release.
That's fine. That's what we're looking for.
I would have to go with Peter Jackson's Meet the Feebles.
Wow. I was wondering if you were going to go Peter Jackson, and I have not seen the movie that you were mentioning here. Is it very good?
Yes.
Because I am a huge Peter Jackson fan. I mean, who isn't, right?
Have you ever seen Dead Alive?
Never seen Dead Alive.
Oh, man. See, Peter Jackson's early stuff, Bad Taste, Dead Alive, and Meet the Feebles, for me, better than his more recent work. Although he's an absolutely phenomenal director. Lord of the Rings, can't say enough about that trilogy. It was amazing.
Absolutely.
He brought that to life. But as far as Meet the Feebles goes, people have tried to do this since and have failed miserably. We have a look behind the curtain at the Muppet Show. For all intents and purposes, this is the Muppet Show. There's different characters and whatnot, but they're all familiar archetypes, and it's absolutely twisted. Like,
so these are Muppets that we're watching?
Yeah, the movie is done with puppets.
Okay, we don't see the humans controlling the puppets?
Not whatsoever. Okay. They're done as if they were actual living beings. Like, even behind the scenes when they walk off stage, they're real.
This already sounds great.
Yeah, and they're doing drugs. There's sex scandals and social disease. And, my God, it's just absolutely filthy. The movie is grimy, disgusting, slimy. There's not enough adjectives to describe how down and dirty this movie is. I mean, Peter Jackson, some people may not know this about him, but Weta Works, the studio that did all the special effects
for Lord of the Rings,
Lord of the Rings, actually did the animatronics and puppeteering for this movie, and he started out as a puppet guy and also started out as a really dirty guy. And the first time I ever watched Meet the Feebles was back in my college days when, let's just say that I was in a different state of mind when I saw this, and I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. Watch this movie when you're absolutely sober and you will still be disturbed out of your gourd.
Wow.
It's disturbing, 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 and highly enjoyable. Highly enjoyable.
This movie went from off my radar to the top of the queue as you were talking. And this is definitely a must-rent for me.
Yes, yes. Put it at the top of your queue. Meet the Feebles. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't even think of things to say about it. It's just that mind-blowing.
Yeah.
What was yours?
Sounds awesome. It sounds very I think a common theme that we're going to see when we're talking about directors and their first outings is how creative they are, because that's sort of probably what gives them their launches their career. I mean, they got to sort of stand out, I think. You can't come out with a movie that's sort of ordinary.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be talking about them as a standout first outing if it wasn't something, as you just mentioned.
Right. If The Frighteners was Peter Jackson's first movie, we wouldn't be talking about it, even though The Frighteners was great.
Oh, yeah. Great movie. My pick for director's first outing is I went back and to prepare myself for the podcast. I rewatched the movie again for the umpteenth million time. This is Wes Anderson's 1996 breakout hit Bottle Rocket.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with Bottle Rocket?
Yes, of course.
This film only introduced us to Owen Wilson and Luke Wilson, but also introduced us to the wonderful worlds and crazy worlds that Wes Anderson creates. He has such a way of just...
What was his other film that was really good?
He has The Royal Tenenbaums. He also has Rushmore.
Did he do Gummo?
No.
That was a good film, too.
He also did Life Aquatic. And most recently, the Darjeeling Limited.
Very offbeat films.
Yes. Quirky. He has just a humor about him. Each movie, when you see it, is definitely has that trademark Wes Anderson feel.
Yeah.
Bottle Rocket, 1996, has Owen Wilson and Luke Wilson basically acting like they're these big-time robbers, crime mob, and they're going to rob different places and people, and they're in fact just basically like teenagers at the time, and places they're robbing, for instance, is a bookstore, but yet they have this elaborate plan on how they're going to rob the bookstore, when yet the guy is basically letting him just take the cash, and it has that sort of odd humor that they're making it this huge thing, and the climax, to give you an idea, is they're going to rob a cold storage place. And there's nobody in the place but, like, three workers, and these guys are going all out with walkie-talkies and just an absolutely hilarious role for Luke Wilson and Owen Wilson. Great movie. If you haven't given it a spin, I think it's probably Wes Anderson after Royal Tenenbaums, probably his second-best movie. I like it more than I like Rushmore. Definitely a movie that you got to give a spin, and it's one of those you watch it 2, 3, 4 times, and you start laughing even more at the characters and how funny each line is.
Yeah, I would agree. Although I would put Rushmore ahead. I absolutely love Bottle Rocket. The Wilson brothers, absolutely great performances from them.
Yeah,
before they really started to get silly. Because I think especially Luke, or is it Owen? Which one was in Meet the Parents?
That was Owen.
Owen, the blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah, Owen especially, although he's a fantastic comedic actor, has been getting a little too silly for my taste.
Absolutely.
But that movie was amazing. Bottle Rocket.
Yeah. You hit it right on the head when you said it's before they sort of got like extremely well known, and now they're trying to be funny. They played characters where it was – the humor was – in the characters. It wasn't like they were absolutely saying lines to try to be funny.
Right.
They were delivering lines that just were funny.
Yes. Yeah. It's not a gag piece.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just the characters themselves are you know, doing their own thing, and we're just there to enjoy it.
Which is what he's a master of, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. All his movies, like I say, when once you get used to Wes Anderson, you could put on a movie. If you didn't know he had a new movie out and you came in within a minute, you would know it's a Wes Anderson movie just by the way the characters and the environment. He always has certain quirkiness about everything going on screen.
Shall we say atmosphere?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Great atmosphere for Wes Anderson. And finally, I guess my last question to you, Matt, was we just finished with the 2009 summer movie season known as the popcorn movie season. And I just wanted to ask you if you had any one standout film that you would recommend if people hadn't seen to go out and see it before it's out of the theater.
Well, stuff that's still in the theater?
Yeah. Did you see anything out there recently? Maybe an Inglourious Basterds.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, very good movie.
No, man. It's tough for me to get out now. I'm going to, obviously, since we're doing a podcast now I have an excuse.
Yeah.
One that came out this summer, though.
Yeah.
I would have to say, you know, not to reiterate, but Watchmen.
Yeah.
For me, that was the greatest film that came out this year, and period.
Right now at the top of my list, I have 500 Days of Summer. A little indie film.
I gotta see it.
Love story with a comedy. It's extremely creative. Great little like indie soundtrack going with it. It's still in theaters. It might be hard to find right now, but I would rush out and go see it.
Cool. Well, what else we got going on? Are we gonna wrap it up here?
I think we can look forward to next week's episode, podcast number two.
Yeah,
Cinema John number two.
Number two. So, how do you feel about that? We got our first one under the belt.
You know, right now I feel pretty good about it. You know, I wasn't sure how it was going to go over, especially with that top 10 list coming so early in the show. I thought this is really going to say a lot. Not going over the list was genius because we ended up not overlapping but one time.
Yeah, you know, I think this is good. We have distinct taste. You and I, you know.
Yeah.
You're a Sox fan. I'm a Cubs fan.
You're obviously a zombie fan.
Yes. Are you a zombie fan?
I'm not a zombie fan.
See, we're coming from different areas, so you're going to get a nice little different view, some good coverage here on Cinema Jaw from different camps, from different viewpoints. Me and Rye have definite distinct tastes.
Absolutely.
And they don't overlap all that much.
Which is good.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Although, you know what, Rye, I still love you.
I still love you, Matt. So for Cinema Jaw Episode 1, live from Mothers on Division, that's all, folks, and we will see you next week.
Before we go, I just want to thank our producer, Steve Reno-Mrazek, and say thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.